Hey, welcome to Razzle Dazzle, a podcast about video games and pop culture with an emphasis on them video games.
All right, it's Razzle Dazzle time. I'm your host, Jared.
And I'm Patrick.
And that's our sound guy, Joe.
Hello.
What are you doing?
I'm being anime protagonist, okay? let me be who I want to be. I've been watching a lot of anime.
Okay, that's cool.
I've been...
cool as a board.
I went over to the East Coast to hang out with my half-brother who's had a baptism going on, and then I have my family friend who I call cousin because we kind of just grew up together as if we were cousins, so he's my cousin. And I went over there. I hadn't been watching anime on and off along with other shows, and then I went over there, and my cousin, quote-unquote, was like, yo, bro, you got to watch this and this. And I'm like, whoa. And then I just kind of got an anime binge. The one that I most recently finished, The Great Pretender. It's on Netflix.
The Great Pretender. That sounds like me in high school. That's not true.
I think the title premise is off that like old song by some people. It's like a 60s song. The Great Pretender. But basically, it's about con artists.
Oh, great. Oh, that makes sense.
And scam artists.
That makes sense.
And it starts out pretty rough because they have this whole dynamic where the protagonist is Japanese, but everyone else is. Well, everyone's from like around the world or whatever.
Sure.
But the protagonist is Japanese, so they have it so that it's an actual Japanese for the dub. They have it so that it's an actual Japanese voice actor who speaks English.
That's
so it sounds like a very heavy accent. Right. The English is a bit rough, and a lot of people didn't like that. But once you watch the first episode, it switches to a normal dub, which the actual dub is actually pretty good for a lot of the characters. And oh boy, it's one season in three parts for three different scams. And each scam kind of gets into the backstory of each of the con artists. And, oh boy, it's really good.
Like, okay.
Or I wouldn't say really good. It was
nice.
It was a fun watch.
Right.
Like, I sat through it. It wasn't like one of those things where I'm constantly checking the time like I do for some shows. I was able to just sit through it, enjoy it, binged a bit of it towards the end because the last part is really good.
Okay.
I'd recommend it.
You got kind of hooked. Like kind
I'd say kind of hooked. I'm really hoping for a season four because they kind of hint, because there's four of the dudes, but there's only three parts. And they hint towards the backstory of the last dude, which is like the main biggest scam artist, the most accomplished of them, I would say.
Yeah.
And that it's literally just like he talks to someone, the person walks away, and then he goes and grabs like a ring around his necklace and like talks to somebody who that ring represents, I guess.
As you do.
And then the show just ends.
So it's
and
like,
the season ends. And I'm just like...
It's like he's talking to the dead?
I think. I don't know. Or it's a lost love? Who knows? I don't know. But now I have to wait for a new season if there even is one. The show isn't really that popular, so I don't know if it'll get one.
Wow. I mean, there are a lot of shows that, like, come in with another season even if they're not that popular.
I hope so. It was definitely good.
Personally, anyway. I've been watching... I binge-watched... the second part of Pokemon Journeys on Netflix.
Okay.
I love it. It's so good. Pokemon's Pokemon, you know. I don't have to, like, explain much to anybody how much I love Pokemon. So, you know, I did all that, like, in a day. And then the next day, I binge-watched Wizards, Tales of Arcadia by Guillermo
del Toro.
I can't pronounce that.
Why do you
I'm
have
sorry.
So much? You can pronounce I don't know. Japanese names just
I
fine.
I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. But yeah, Del Toro made that along with Three Below and Trollhunters. Great series. Great little universe he's got there. I like it.
It's a show?
It's a show, yeah.
Oh, I thought Del Toro only did movies.
Well, not anymore.
Oh, okay.
He's trying to expand his resume.
There you go.
I mean, when you're that big in Hollywood, it's kind of you can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on a zombie tear.
Zombie tear?
I'm going to start Walking Dead. I'm probably going to hate it, but I'm going to start it.
I only got to the first two seasons. I couldn't do it after the second season.
The only bit I've ever seen of Walking Dead is when, spoiler alert, the tiger gets eaten.
Okay.
I haven't gotten that far.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't care.
Nobody
honestly.
Does.
Like,
oh, no, not the tiger.
Right.
Yeah, says no one ever.
So I'm just going to come out and say it. It is October. It's spoopy season, or at least that's when this episode is going to come out. It's the start of October, and what better way to start than talking about zombies, viruses, corporate scandals, and stuff. Like the scariest thing on Earth, right?
Corporations.
An
umbrella.
Man, because we're talking about scary movies, and you spoilers. You say all this stuff, all these evil people, and then like the first movie I always think of when I think scary movies, thrillers, is Get Out, and then so in my head I'm just like white people.
There you go. No, we're talking about Resident Evil today. We're gonna start off spoopy season with Resident Evil, one of the most critically acclaimed survival horror games ever made. You know, like this series definitely defined the genre, definitely like got this type of genre started with how it's all being run. Like probably without this game we wouldn't have Silent Hill and stuff.
Yeah, Resident Evil and Silent Hill are the big ones.
Yeah,
but we haven't heard much from Silent Hill ever since PT, which was great. But Resident Evil is still very much alive with the game coming out next year.
Ironic, being alive and zombies stuff.
Get it?
Yeah.
So I haven't really looked too much into the older Resident Evil games because while I think they're a great product of their time, when it comes to horror games,
you're talking about
today,
the original games, not the remake, right? The remakes.
No, I'm talking about the remakes and the originals.
Oh, okay.
When it comes to the originals, they're great pieces for their time, but they're not good today by any means.
I would argue with RE2 and 3 remake.
That's what I'm saying. The remakes are a little different, but if you just play the original games, they're kind of hard to play through. But the remakes, man, oh my gosh. It's like, because you'd think a lot of these companies are washed up, you know, because they make just a bunch of different of the same type of game. So they're not that good or whatever. But then the Resident Evil 2 remake came out, and then the Resident Evil 3 remake came out, and then both games, I didn't play them, but I watched them. I'm like, man, this is survival horror done right.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
because we have really good developments with video game AI these days. Where we have games like Metal Gear Solid 5, where the AI adapts to you. They wear helmets if you do headshots a lot. They put up lights if you go at night a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have this thing where games are starting to develop really good AI, and then you come out with these Resident Evil games where zombies behave very much so like
zombies.
That is
so true. The zombies?
All the monsters behave exactly like you expect them to.
Oh. And some don't even know how they're going to be. You can't expect it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like the kind of... That makes you like be like, oh my gosh, what is this thing? What is it gonna do? You know,
you expect them to behave unexpectedly,
right? Yeah.
Which is
that's a good way to put it.
The biggest part of survival horror is discomfort.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Because in that discomfort is where you feel afraid.
Right.
How Resident Evil 2 and 3, the remakes, really get you with this discomfort is they're one, lack of resources.
Okay.
You have to be really sparing with what you do, the paths you take. And so every decision, everything is scary because everything can either take away a lot of your resources
or kill
you. Yeah,
resource management is huge in these games.
Yeah.
At least in the early games.
And then you have something like the big dudes, like the...
Yeah, Nemesis.
Tyrant.
Mr. X.
Yeah. These things which are literally unbeatable for most of the portion of the game.
Yeah. William Burchant.
It's literally that discomfort in that you can't do anything about it but run.
Yeah.
And so like
for the majority of the games, right? At least the early games, there's this big old dude chasing you constantly. He's always on the prowl. They are always on the prowl. All you can do, like, throughout the majority of the game, just stun them and run away.
There's no safety. Which is the big thing. And then every time you're close to safety, a lot of times they'll have scripted events where
it's taken away.
Yeah, your safety is taken away by these characters, which makes it normally characters like this, these like invincible things, you can tend to just look at them like in most games you tend to look at them like, oh my gosh, I can't beat this
thing. Monster.
No, it's another monster, I can't beat it, this is frustrating.
Right.
But in games like the Resident Evil
you're not supposed to beat it.
They master it because you're not supposed to beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't like a cheap gimmick to bring it in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like story cutscenes where, you know, you're playing like Xenoblade where you're fighting the dudes, you win, and then you lose in the cutscene.
Yeah.
You
knock them to like half health, cutscene, boom, you know? You're done.
That doesn't make me feel any more like. That doesn't make me feel scared of the antagonist. If anything, it makes me feel like the antagonist is a wimp. because it's like I can just beat them up anytime. Right. But then games like this, one, you can't beat them up.
No.
Two, they're there when you don't want them.
Yep.
Three, they're going to stop you from saving or feeling comfortable at all. And it's suddenly like you're actually afraid of these invincible things mm-hmm. because they actually affect your gameplay and they're not just cheap gimmicks. They're there and they hurt.
Yeah. One like big difference, like at the start, what I feel that really helped Resident Evil be what it is, right? Be like a hard game,
very
hard to control. It because there's something called tank controls. These games are meant to be played with tank controls, and for the PS1, you didn't have the joysticks like you do now with the DualShock. All you have is the D-pad, and that's already hard to use if you're not used to it. And with the first game, for example, the developers have taken away your ability to freely move wherever you want, so you got to be extremely careful. That's already one thing. You're already on your toes, right? Then you got these I'm not going to say mobs because there's not like that many usually at a time, but these zombies, these creatures, the undead coming at you, and your resources are finite. You know, you don't have unlimited ammo. You don't have all your weapons at once. You start off with a handgun, for example, you know. And building upon that with the future games, having something chase you, having safety being taken away, except for, like, save rooms, you know. Having, like, a maximum amount or limited amount of storage space on you, like, your pouches and stuff. Like,
inventory?
You only carry... There you go, inventory. Brain fart. My bad. My bad, dude.
Wow.
Yeah, having a limited amount of inventory space, you know, that can only be upgraded a few times throughout the game. You know, like, there are a lot of things to consider while playing these games, you know? Just even the early points. Now, one thing I find interesting in Resident Evil as a whole, there's, like, a big lack in using the word zombies to describe the zombies. You know, they hardly ever use that word, and when they do, that's something, because not every Resident Evil game you're fighting against the undead. For example, Resident Evil 4, you're up against like villagers and cultists and stuff like that, and some monsters, some mutants or whatever.
Crocodili.
Yeah, I mean, that also in Resident Evil 2. You know, and in other future games, you're dealing with like possessed people or whatever. You know, it's in Resident Evil 7, you're dealing with a family that's infected by some virus, but they're not dead.
I love Resident Evil 7, but we'll get into that later.
There you go. And
Jack for life.
Resident Evil has like this weird thing of going, the story isn't all that great. Is it like the main part, the thing about Resident Evil that makes it so well beloved is not the story, it's the actual gameplay, is the actual fear that it incites in you while you play.
Every single, because I've looked into at least the remakes, mm-hmm. Because there was a period of time where I was running Dungeons and Dragons games, but with a survival horror kind of theme.
Right.
And I needed some, but I'm not too familiar with survival horror. I grew up in a conservative Christian family, and that stuff's generally pushed away.
Okay.
So I needed like reference so that I can make something good. Resident Evil games kind of served as that perfect reference where I got an idea of different ways you can instill fear in, or not fear, but discomfort in people. In Dungeons and Dragons, you have a lot of expectation of, like, you kill an enemy, it's dead. So I took a lot of, I don't know if it was, I grabbed it from a Resident Evil something, but I ended up having zombie-like things, which when you killed them, like, two turns later, they get back up.
Right.
Always.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter what you do.
That's usually the case in Resident Evil 2. You shoot a zombie X amount of times, they go down. But that doesn't mean they are down.
Yeah.
You know?
And they come back up a little later.
Yeah.
And I took that and I ran with it. And it ended up being one of the funnest parts about the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because, in essence, it was a mission of you go into a facility, you go to the back of the facility, then you go to the center of the facility and hold down as things come towards you. So people in D&D, they have this habit of, I need to go and I need to kill everything before I continue. So that's where their comfort is.
And then there's something in the back of their mind, you're like, oh, wait, these guys are going to come back soon, so what am I going to do, right?
Yeah, that, so I took away their comfort, that comfortable, this is how you play D&D, by being like, by the way, these guys aren't going to die.
Mm-hmm.
You need to figure out how to do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then that discomfort sets in. Then I added your Resident Evil type of big monster that can't be beaten.
Right, the Nemesis, it's, Mr. X, Tyrant.
It's really slow.
Yeah.
You can run away from it easily. But it's going to constantly be following you.
Yeah, of course.
And with that, that was the perfect thing because it ruins every single plan that people come up with. And when your plans get ruined, there's more discomfort and then things like that. So Resident Evil ended up serving for me as a great example of survival horror because there's so many different ways where they get the one creative monster choices. Something I find super big in just video games in general is having different dynamics between
the designs of the monsters in RE.
Dynamics between the player and the AI.
Right.
Where I really find it good when you have, or not AI, but just non-player.
Right.
Where I find it really important so that there's like a variety of things you go up against because you can't just do the single strategy for the entire game.
Yeah. It's not,
you have to rethink how you go about each situation because now suddenly there's these things that crawl on the walls that hear you if you
the
walk
lickers.
Too fast.
Yeah.
And you have these, and then you have those.
The giant slug monsters in the sewers and stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you have stuff like that and zombies and adds another dynamic because, you know, before with the lickers, you know, you just kind of walk slowly. You hope that you don't bump into them.
See, I'm going to cut you off real quick. That's like one thing I love about Resident Evil. Since Resident Evil, a big part of it is, at least in the early games, right? There are a lot of puzzles. It's a very puzzle-based game, right? Even the enemies
are
treated as puzzles. Lickers is a good example. You can either shoot them. Their weakness is their head, their brain, because that's exposed. Or, since they're blind, you can just sneak past them. That's part
but,
of it. I love that so
and then
much.
They're able to add more puzzles because if you have this dynamic of you can sneak past them,
yeah.
What if all of a sudden you throw a zombie in with a licker?
Right.
You can't sneak past
what
them because the zombie can see you.
Yeah.
So now it presents another type of puzzle through the enemy, which is something
so
that.
So, therefore, what weapons are you going to use? How are you going to use them? Who are you going to go for first, right?
And that's what I really love about the Resident Evil style of survival horror games. I played through recently Alien Isolation.
Great game.
Another really great
survival horror
game.
Yes.
But where my problem with it came is the fact that once you reach a certain point, the gameplay kind of gets redundant because it's just you and alien, you and alien, you and the alien, or Xenomorph, whatever.
Xenomorph, yeah.
Over and over again. There's not much variance in what you're dealing with other than the Xenomorph. Once I kind of got to that point, the game kind of died for me. It was really, really fun up until I ran through like two different chapters or whatever of this experience. And I'm like, I want something new.
Right.
But I wasn't really getting anything new. It was the same type of gameplay. So I ultimately gave up on the game. But it's still a really, really good game. I mean, I got it for $3 because of a Steam sale.
Dude, you should really play through that. I say you should really play through that because, it starts off like, You're safe, you're good, but then there's like a looming threat. Then the threat becomes apparent. Then you keep seeing that over and over and over again. Yes, but then I don't want to spoil it, but I'm going to spoil it a little bit.
I watched through the entire game before I played.
Yeah, it's not only one alien. There's more. You know, yeah, exactly. But regardless, I totally get what you mean, though. I totally get what you mean.
Resident Evil always mixes it up.
That is true.
They're trying to.
Doesn't always mean, like, it's a good thing. Because, for example, I am mainly familiar with the first three games, right?
Okay.
That's standard, slow-paced, puzzle-based survival horror stuff, right? Resident Evil 4 took a more action approach, but it's, you still have those puzzle elements. You know, it's like a good in between action and the slow paced classic Resident Evil stuff. Then past that, for 5 and 6 and stuff, it's like mainly action games. Little of the, you know, puzzle and is little to survival horror stuff. You know.
Yeah, but you know, when was it? Resident Evil 5 was the most highest selling Resident Evil or even Capcom game ever.
Yes, that is true.
The guys were like, okay, let's try to make it what our fans
let's
would
do it
love.
Again.
Because it was a commercial success, but a critical meh.
Yeah, and Resident Evil 6 is the second highest selling Capcom game now because of that. You know,
yeah.
The newer generation of that time, whenever that game came out,
mm-hmm.
wanted more of that. But for the old school RE fans that grew up with RE 1, 2, and 3, and 4 still, you know, were like, it had like a bit of the experience taken away because of the slow puzzle-based horror survivalness thing going, you know? That was like taken away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think 7 brought it back.
Yeah. And then 7 did a great... They made a great 180 with 7. Yeah. I'll explain that.
Real quick for 7, I do also want to bring up how great that game was, mm-hmm. innovative-wise,
mm-hmm.
because they did something that not a lot of game companies were willing to try at the time, which was VR. They added a VR
right.
port to
Dude,
the game.
That's crazy.
Which
at launch.
Is perfect
that's
for
crazy.
Survival horror,
yes.
At launch for a survival horror game. No real big companies were doing VR at the time, other than Valve, who was like the pioneer basically of VR, and one of the pioneers. And then I don't really think there were many AAA people outside of that doing VR. So Capcom with Resident Evil 7, the first to kind of step into that with
mm-hmm.
a game that is perfect for it. I mean,
it is 100% perfect.
Like Resident Evil 7, I believe, is the first person. Resident
yeah, it
Evil,
is
right?
100% the first. Yeah, the first one for first person, and it's crazy.
And I also love how they use that first person nature.
Yeah.
I only watched portions of the game. I didn't
right.
play it, but watching portions of it, a lot of stuff that happens is based off sound,
mm-hmm.
which is huge for
kind of similar with Alien.
Horror. And yeah, similar with Alien. Yeah.
Welcome to the family, son. And he just punches you in the face.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
my favorite.
Or when like he bust through a wall or a door
yeah,
behind you.
I love Jack.
It's always behind you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you hear this loud bang, your instinct is to turn around, but if you're not playing with sound, then ultimately you're not going to have as fun of an experience because you're not going to turn around and see the debris coming out
right,
of the walls.
Right,
this dude
right.
just banged through the wall. You just, or you could play it and you hear the sound and you're like, oh, shoot, you have that fear.
There.
You have that fear factor in you so much, you don't even turn around. You just go because
like,
you know.
You know that feeling when... It's late at night. You go into the kitchen to get something like a snack, right? You turn off the lights. You're going back to your room. The entire house is dark, and you're just like sprint or speed walking. You can feel like a little. Your hairs in the back of your neck stand up, and it's like somebody's trying to reach you, trying to grab you. Have you ever gotten that feeling?
I'll give you one better.
It's like that.
I'll give you one better. I went a few days ago. I was walking my brother's dog outside. And my brother's dog pooped.
Nighttime?
Yeah. My
okay.
brother's dog pooped like super far. I live right next to a swamp.
Nice.
And my brother's dog like went pretty close to the edge of this fence and then pooped real far out. And then I didn't have a bag at the time. So I led the dog inside. I grabbed the bag so I can go pick this up.
Right.
And then as I'm going to pick it up, I just hear like a light growl.
No.
I couldn't pay attention to the pitch because as soon as I heard the growl, I was like, time to go. And so, literally booked it. I go about halfway knowing that I'm safe. But then there's just that feeling
mm-hmm.
of
it's
like
something looming.
Just this feeling of it could have followed you. You're not actually safe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ha. Yeah. And I kept running back into the house because there's that feeling of there is no safety until you know you're safe.
Yeah.
And you get that a lot with that game.
Yeah, with Resident Evil 7, you get that a lot. You'll be in a quiet hallway. And you'll be like, I'm not safe.
Mm-hmm.
That game has, like, it's divided in sections with the boss. Like, in old games, the big boss is, like, always Nemesis or Mr. X or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a whole family. You start with Jack, the father. And I was watching a YouTuber play through Resident Evil 7, but he replaced the family models with Family Guy.
Oh, man.
So the mother was, Peter was Jack. The mother was Lois.
Yeah.
The son was Chris. And Mia, your wife, was Meg.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody likes Meg. So I don't remember their real names. So I'm just going to go, there's a section with Peter, Lois, Chris, and then and then the grandma, which is, like, revealed to be the big thing behind all this. I don't want to get too spoilery because it's kind of new, 2017.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And, like, then again with Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the mixing it up a little. Because you fight all four of them differently, and sometimes you just can't fight. You can't really fight the grandma, the old lady, which is actually a young lady, but we'll get into that later. I like that. It mixes it up a lot.
That's like kind of Metroid, mm-hmm. Metroid-y in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like Metroid Prime. Like you got a few certain bosses, you know they're there or something. But yeah.
These newer games are great for modding. I was also watching that same YouTuber play Resident Evil 3 Remake, you replace Claire with Shaggy and Carlos with Rick Sanchez. And Jill in Resident Evil 3?
Jill Valentine is 3, yeah.
Okay, my bad. And the Tyrant, Mr. X, Nemesis with Waluigi.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
Wow.
It was great. So good for modding.
I was about to ask how the moddability of these games are. Because, I mean, mods is like one of the biggest reasons why I play games on PC.
It's mainly for aesthetics, but I don't think about, like, I don't think it would shatter gameplay. I don't think you can do that without crashing it. But still, aesthetics is pretty funny. Slashing zombies as Shaggy is great.
I think we're talking about this series at a good time because Resident Evil Village, Resident Evil 8, is coming out next year. It's coming out soon. So I'm not too familiar. I haven't really watched any of the trailers. So I'm assuming it's going to be more like 7.
Okay.
Is it?
It's going to be in first person.
It's going to be first person?
And I think it's going to follow like kind of right after because they say Chris and Ethan.
Oh, okay. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I think
that's leaving right off from 7.
Yeah. And
okay.
I don't know what the story is going to be about. It's going to take place in a Russian village where T-virus came out or something. I don't know.
I mean, like I said.
The story takes a backseat.
Like I said earlier, the story is never all that prominent in Resident Evil. Like, all you have to know is that Umbrella Corporation they're the bad guys. They made this virus, the T, the G virus. There's so many viruses, but the main two are the T and G virus. The T virus is from Resident Evil 1 and 2, and the G is from 3, I think. I could be wrong, but regardless, they made these viruses. Somehow they started an outbreak by accident, but they wanted to use this virus to sell it to the U.S. military and stuff in the games. So they're militarizing zombies, basically. Zombies and mutants and stuff like that. But of course it goes terribly wrong. Mm-hmm. It turns on them. Umbrella gets taken down, and then we have heroes like Chris and Claire Redfield, Jill Valentine, Leon Kennedy, Those are like the main four I know that I actually care about and I actually like to see. And, it's up to them to like not just save the day, but like escape the mess that's been left behind. It's crazy. That's completely survival horror, and don't even get me started on the movies.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that they were to interpret those games into a movie because it's very basic story. Like evil Walmart has released zombies. Live
like evil CVS because it's a pharmaceutical company.
Right.
And there's 6 of them.
Listen, they're not the worst video game adaptation.
But they're one
adaptation.
Of. But they're one
they're,
of.
They're up there.
They're Detective Pikachu or Sonic the Hedgehog.
I mean, there are very, very, very few actual good game movie adaptations.
Yeah.
Mainly just because, I mean, the people in charge
Hollywood
of, like,
doesn't care.
I think a lot of the people who make these don't play the games.
Exactly. They don't care.
If you don't mind brainless action movies, they're going to be all right.
Yeah, there you go. There
if
you go.
Don't want to think, if you just want to see, what's her name?
I don't know her name.
Something.
I mean, her character's name is Alice, which is a completely new character for RE, just for the movies.
And then they bring in characters from the games, which
Wesker.
Leon.
The Redfields are in there too, yeah. Like, there's references. Even Nemesis is in the Apocalypse movie. There's references, but it's very loosely based on the actual source materials, it's not my favorite.
They need to make up their mind, either original or not. Come on, guys.
But, like, it's fun to make fun of. It's so fun to be like, what is going on here? Because it's, like, the action. It's an action movie. It's not, like, a survival horror movie, mm-hmm. So, like,
one-liner galore.
Yeah, it's just all action. These came out like around the same time as RE4, 5, and 6, So this is all action, testosterone, guns, explosions, zombies type stuff, Very 90s. It's like Dead or Alive. Is it Dead or Alive?
Dead or Alive.
That's the one where you're on the island.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, like you're just fighting hordes of zombies. You know, it's like that. You know, that's what the movies are. It's something else. But just to leave off on a good note, right? I think Resident Evil, as a whole, does a great job. The remakes of 2 and 3, I'm not going to say much about 1 because it's just like up-resing the games, like adding some new things, yeah. But Resident Evil 2, in my opinion, is the best Resident Evil game, period. And I won't say Resident Evil 3 is up there, but the only thing is that it's very, very short. But it's cool. It's still cool. It looks great. They implemented new ways to use the old formula in like a over-the-shoulder perspective, like Resident Evil 4 and stuff like that. You really feel immersed when it comes to these games, these remakes and stuff. And they look beautiful. They sound great. They play great. They're great.
Nice.
Great.
Well, I mean, I'll definitely agree. Once again, I haven't played really much of them, but I mean, I've researched them.
Okay.
For D&D reasons, and they serve as great sort of example survival horror, at least the remakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, if you haven't played them, like me, you definitely should. I definitely think I should play them.
I think a good way to, like, start is either with RE2 and 3 remake or Resident Evil 4.
I think Resident Evil 7 isn't a bad get starting point, because Resident Evil 7 was very... Resident Evil 7 was very much made to be, like, trying to get people into Resident Evil. At least I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So...
If you can't follow all the characters, like Leon, Chris, Jill, Claire,
mm-hmm.
they just start with new, and, you know, just Chris is at the very end, like, oh my god, I'm a Resident Evil fan.
Ah! Yeah, some fan service is there.
Yeah, but it's just mainly just Ethan just trying to survive and save his wife, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only kind of.
Well, that's all the time we have for today, guys. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Razzle Dazzle. Please let us know what you think of today's episode somewhere on the internet. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Razzle Dazzle Show. Make sure to follow us, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And yeah, we'll catch you on the next one. Stay spooky.
Watch out for zombies and Mr. X with his hat. My favorite thing to do is shoot his hat off the first time.
You get an achievement for that. Yeah, it's so cool. It's a nice little touch. You know, he's a big old smooth criminal.
Normalize
Mr. X
zombies with hats.